Welcome to the Tim Fowler Show, where production is paramount and we discuss the tools, time, and people associated with getting jobs done and making a profit. On today's episode of the Tim Fowler Show, we will be talking about switching to the LEED Carpenter system with the help of special guest Steve Nash of Upscale Remodeling in Freeville, New York. Alongside Tim Fowler, I'm your co-host Steve Wheeler. Here is the Tim Fowler Show.
Hey everyone, Tim Fowler back again, and welcome to the Tim Fowler Show. So here we have another topic from one of our listener emails, and by the way, just keep them coming. As I've said before, sometimes it's hard to think of new things to put on the show. So if you've got some ideas, send them in and I'll try my best to get them on. Don't forget the email is tim@remodelersadvantage.com. So a listener wrote in and apparently they have a business that's very, very typical of the way companies start. The owner of a company, is doing the business, they're doing the work out in the field, they hire some people, and then eventually the work just gets to be too much for the owner to be on the site and trying to sell and trying to manage this thing that they've created. And this particular business owner wrote in and said, this is what I've got, and I think I'd like to do the LEED Carpenter system, but I don't know how to switch. I don't know how to transition. I don't know how to shift to a different setup. So one of the things that I tend to forget, because I've been out yakking about production for 20 years now, is that every year more and more companies are being created around this model. See, I tend to kind of get around the companies that have already developed. And so there are many, many companies that are developing. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today, is just how do you shift from that position to actually having some structure to your production system. The thing that everybody needs to understand is that even once you've got that LEED Carpenter system put in place, if you get to another milestone, there'll be another change that occurs. And that's one of the things that's really important for people, is to understand that production is not a stagnant situation. You can be in the LEED Carpenter system for 10 years maybe, but then at some point you may want to shift into a little more dynamic type of structure. And maybe we'll talk about that in another show. So the big question is, how do you make this work successfully? How do you create it so that it's not just walking out to your crew one day and say, Billy Bob, you're now a LEED Carpenter, go. Because I think we understand that that's probably going to cause a problem. So we want to find out, like, how do you actually make this shift? And now I know a lot of business owners, this is their baby. You know, what they've created is their thing. And there's all kinds of fears. There's all kinds of worries. Like, you know, what will happen when someone makes a mistake out in the job? What about that decision that a LEED Carpenter makes that isn't the one that I would make? Will they treat my clients the same way that I will? Will they respect the client's property the same way that I will? And so all these questions kind of come up. And so many, many companies stay stagnant. So we hope that you can really get something from this. And maybe no matter where your company is, you'll get something from this podcast that'll help a little bit with your system. So let's get right into it, Steve.
So, Tim, this is a genius topic. I'm very excited to introduce Steve Nash. He began as a carpenter for his father, starting at a young age and working all through his teenage years. He founded Upscale Remodeling in 1991, shortly after college, with a bucket full of tools, a new truck, and a whole lot of ambition to build a great remodeling company. Today, Upscale Remodeling is a full-service design-build firm specializing mostly in kitchens and bath remodeling, additions and basements, and window and door replacement. They operate out of a 5,000 square foot showroom, which really helps with design and product selection, not to mention communication across all team members. They've been using some variation of the LEED Carpenter system since the very beginning, So they've gotten pretty good at it. Welcome to the show, Steve.
Well, thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Hey, so this is really exciting. So I guess, you know, other than the intro that Steve just read, give us a little bit more information about upscale remodeling. And I guess maybe particularly like what you do, but also like how did you actually get started into this lead carpenter system for your company?
You know, I don't remember what got me started in it. It just seemed like the natural way to do it. I'm nearly certain that we got started long before your book came out. You know, I had two guys working for me. It was myself as a carpenter and then two other guys. And we were just going out there and doing one job, you know, after the other. It was probably 2 years into starting the business that my one top carpenter who seemed to really have a lot of experience said, you know, you gotta go sell. I can handle everything out in the field. And so I started kind of laying off the work out in the field and started doing all the selling, all the estimating, all the production management behind the scenes, marketing, all that kind of stuff, and left the work up, you know, to be done by the guys. And we fumbled along with that through the 90s. I don't know when your book came out. When did it come out,
Tim? I think 98, maybe.
Yeah, that's what I thought, towards the end of the 90s. When I saw that book, I probably found it, you know, by attending one of your seminars at one of the events. And that was exactly what we needed or what we thought we needed. And I never looked back.
Okay, terrific. So what do you see? I mean, for that transition that occurs, what do you see as some of the benefits to a company from going, you know, like your carpenter comes to you and says, Steve, go sell stuff so we have work to do and let me run the job. But what are some of the benefits that occur for the business owner when they shift to this lead carpenter system?
Well, the number one reason I think is, you know, passing that baton and, you know, freeing up the owner for production freeing up the owner, production manager and the salesperson. I mean, I don't know who, you know, whether you have all those things set up or whether the listeners have those things set up in their company, but if they don't, it certainly frees up the owner to do all of that stuff. And if they have the others in place, the production manager and salesperson, kind of frees them up to do their job too. You know, so that's one benefit. You know, carpenters tend to want to be in charge is another. So letting them do their thing, not all of them want to be in charge, which we probably will talk about.
Yeah.
But, you know, the ones that do, it's a great thing. You know, so, you know, in some ways, the lead carpenter system can help with the labor shortage. You know, depending on your job size, a single lead carpenter can oversee one or two less qualified carpenters in the field. Also, instead of having, you know, two or three skilled carpenters do one job, you can, you know, if they're good and they can all be leads, they can all run their own job. So you can have several jobs going on at once. So those are kind of the top three or four benefits I see. There's probably a few more.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of different ones. And I think it's important to think them through because you have to kind of sell yourself on letting go of some responsibility to get some benefits as you move forward. So I know as we talked, Steve, previous to this podcast, you had mentioned that this has kind of been your way of doing things for many years now. But just recently, someone in your Remodelers Advantage peer group wanted to make the shift as well. And so you were kind of involved in that. Tell us about that. Tell us how that transpired and maybe some of the advice that you gave this business owner as he was thinking about making this shift.
Well, yeah, there was a company that was they were doing about 4 or 5 million a year.
Okay.
And they still hadn't set up this lead carpenter system. And in our one of our remodelers at roundtable meetings, they, you know, were intrigued by this concept. And
okay.
So we got on the phone and talked. There was another member on the phone that also uses the lead carpenter system. So we kind of teamed up and talked with this person. And, you know, by the time we were done talking about all the things that we're probably going to get into today, you know, he was convinced that for a certain portion of his projects, the lead carpenter system was far better than what they were doing. And I think the biggest thing was the guys in his company didn't really know what was going on. They needed direction every single day. And in the smaller job, it just doesn't, in my opinion, it works better if they know everything about that job before they go and start it. And the lead carpenter system really requires that you have that information downloaded into the mind of the lead carpenter at the very least, if not, you know, the couple of other guys that might be on the job. So once you get into bigger projects, like this company did a lot of big projects, I'm not so sure the lead carpenter system works as well, because, you know, you get up to a couple hundred thousand dollars or bigger, we found that those jobs, the carpenter's rarely doing a lot of work. He's spending most of his time managing and can't get anything done. And then that's a challenge. So that seems to me to be more of the model that would fit best there would be a project manager, which right. The lead carpenter in our case can certainly do the project management, but you've got to surrender the fact that lead carpenter isn't going to get much work done. You may need a couple other carpenters on the job to do what he was doing. So I think the biggest thing with this member in transitioning was figuring out how to actually make that transition and get that information over, which he wasn't used to, identifying who in his crew would be good candidates for a lead carpenter. And then I think the biggest hurdle he had was being transparent with all the information, the budget, just basically, you know, opening that up to his crews.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about how you can tell who it ought to be, because I think this is one of the challenges that business owners have. I spoke with a fella about a week or so ago, and he was concerned about, he just didn't have any confidence in the people that were working for him. And so he felt like he or his production manager had to be on top of every little detail. And so if you can, maybe give us a rundown of the types of people, like the types of carpenters that are in a business, and which ones or what qualities would you try to identify for someone who can really be a lead carpenter? Because I've been in businesses where they took their very best carpenter, and they just said, well, that they're a lead carpenter, and they made them a lead carpenter, and it failed miserably because of a lot of different things. So I'm kind of curious from your vantage point, what are the things that if you have, I don't know, 6 or 8 carpenters already on your staff, what would you be looking for that would make a good lead carpenter?
Well, I think first and foremost, they've got to want to do it. If they don't want to be a lead carpenter and be in charge, they may have all the skills, they may be great, but if they don't want to take that role, that's not going to work. They have to, you know, if they do want to take the role, they have to be able to, you know, they have to have good organizational skills. You know, the big thing you hear in this industry with the carpenters that work for us and probably many of the other companies across the country is carpenters, you know, a lot of them don't like the paperwork side of things. And you got to have a balance. You know, there's not a ton of paperwork, you know, as a lead carpenter, but they are going to have to put the hammer down, you know, literally set it down you know, read the paperwork and be fully familiar with the design and fill out forms and, you know, all the stuff that comes along with the lead carpenter position. So they got to be a take charge type of person. They've got to be good with customer service. They've got to be able to interact well with the customer.
So, Steve, how do you actually find out if they are all these things? How do you really know? Because up until this point in time, you've been meeting with the client. You, as the owner, have been, you know, making sure the job runs on schedule. How do you actually kind of put it to the test?
Well, you know, I think honestly, in all my years of doing this, we just tried it.
Okay.
So we put the person out there and watched them carefully. And, you know, first of all, if they wanted to do it, great. Let's see how it goes. And you know, we watched them carefully and supported them, you know, with questions. And, you know, anytime a question came up, we tried to turn them back towards the, you know, back to the information. You know, first of all, this really requires to follow the lead carpenter system, really requires having all the stuff done up front and, you know, all the T's crossed, all the I's dotted, and having clear communication. And so with the lead carpenter, anytime there was a question, you know, trying to steer them back towards, you know, the paperwork and, you know, the contract, and I don't know what's it say, you know, what's it say in there. And, you know, eventually, you know, through that trial and error, again, when you watch it carefully, you know, the ones that are good leads, they kind of stand out.
Okay.
You know, so we kind of did it the, I don't know whether you call it the old fashioned way, just out there and see who's going to stick, but it,
okay,
you know, it worked.
Yeah. I think one of the big challenges that companies have with this is that moving from a carpenter to a lead carpenter is always kind of spoken of like a promotion. And so I think that's one of the most dangerous things you can do is say, you know, this is a promotion, because nobody wants to be demoted. So one of the things that's a challenge is actually letting somebody try to be a lead carpenter and then it not working, and then say, okay, that didn't work, but we still want you to work for us. An awful lot of them go like, no, I won't be demoted, you know, and the other challenge is the pay scale. Almost inherently, everybody thinks a lead carpenter makes more than a good carpenter. And if they take on more responsibility, probably they should. But if you make somebody a lead and you automatically give them a pay raise and they don't work out, you're in trouble.
Right.
So how did you handle that? Or was there any tips to that you could give people?
Well, I think like you just said, I don't think we ever looked at it as a promotion.
Okay.
You know, it was just a change in role. I'll give you two examples. We have, we at the time that we really started, after your book came out, I had a lead carpenter who had been in the business forever. And he was probably in his late 50s at that time.
Right.
And we really relied on him to know, you know, we asked him a lot of questions, the carpentry questions, and he knew it all. But he was the type of guy, you know, he didn't like the role of lead carpenter. And
right.
So, you know, that's, you know, and then we have another one of our youngest guys on staff who needed to gain a bunch of information, you know, knowledge and skill, who was working with this other lead. He was a better lead carpenter. You know, the one that didn't become the lead carpenter or didn't take on a role was making more than the other guy. But, you know, he admitted, he goes, I just shouldn't be teamed up. And in this case, it was Rich, one of my guys in the field, he's a young guy. I'd rather be teamed up with Rich. I'll just do the work. He can be the lead carpenter. I think that Pete was this guy's name. You know, I think at the time he probably made more than Rich all the way through.
Right.
And then, you know, there were some jobs. Once he saw what the role was all about, you know, he warmed up to it, and we could put him on his own jobs as a lead carpenter. But it was a certain type of customer, a certain type of job that worked out for him.
Yeah, yeah. So that's really cool getting, because I've seen that. I had an individual email me the other day and say, hey, we've got a really young guy that's really knocking it out of the park. And that was kind of, and it was almost like, what do we do with him? I go, well, put him in there, let him do the job, because someday he's going to learn all those other skills.
Yeah. I think right now, you know, if I were to give any advice to someone just trying to switch over to that, learn the process, learn the system, and then have an open discussion with your guys and saying, who wants to take this on? And I think maybe you leave the money part out of it so that people aren't jumping at the chance of being a lead carpenter just for, you know, getting that pay raise, because it might not work out. And then what do you do with them?
Right.
You know, you want to keep, in our case, we just keep them on and they team up. We just move them around and they just aren't in charge of the job. You know, they're still going about their day.
Steve, when you're hiring a new carpenter or somebody's coming in, are you always looking for the next lead carpenter, or you're kind of asking the right questions beforehand saying, you know, we're looking for this role or looking for this role? You know, how are you vetting that up front?
Well, it depends. If we just recently were looking for another lead carpenter, so we were, you know, we were after that. We have two. So in our company, we have helpers or entry level, as Tim puts it, entry level carpenters who have a lot of interest and can be a helping hand, but not a lot of experience. We have carpenters who are not necessarily lead carpenters, and then we have lead carpenters. And so just recently we were missing, or we lost a lead carpenter. We needed to replace that person. So we were looking for somebody a bit more experienced, and we happened to find it. If I had an entry level person or another carpenter, apply for the position, we weren't really ready for that. We have enough of that, right now. So, okay. Having said that, you know, when we hire an entry level, carpenter or just a regular carpenter, we're always looking to see, well, do they have the potential to become a lead? You know, like the other two helpers that we have, they have the potential to be a lead, and they want to be in this business. So
one more question about the communication, kind of that technique, getting a little more micro. When you have a lead that's really starting to get into communicating with the client, how do you walk that balance? And is it transparency that helps them, you know, communicate, answer questions, manage the project without overpromising and saying yes to a lot of things? Like, can you hang this door for us? It's just an extra, you know, that type of stuff. So how do you, you know, kind of get somebody into that comfortable communication, but always keeping the profit and schedule in mind?
Well, you know, as I was talking about earlier, this system requires that everything is done up front and ahead of time. And that includes the contract scope, the proposal, the budget, the quotes from the subcontractors, all of that's done ahead of time prior to the job being handed off to the lead carpenter. So in our business, we have, you know, all of that's done. Ideally, we have the subs all lined up before the carpenter even gets a hold of the job. And then we have two very important handoff meetings. And those, you know, the first one happens here in the office. We just started doing these a couple of years ago. It took us a long time to figure out that we needed two meetings instead of just one out there on the job site. But as soon as the carpenter asks a quote unquote dumb question in front of a customer, we realize real quickly we need to be having this conversation back in the office before we get in front of the customer. And that meeting basically is what we call a pre-start meeting. It's held here in our office. We go over all the details with the carpenter so that they can openly discuss issues they have. Well, why'd you figure it this way? I would have done it this way. We can have that conversation, you know, back and forth without the customer listening to all of that. So in that meeting, we go over the design, we go over the proposal, we go over the subcontractors that have been that are going to be on this project. We get feedback from the carpenter, all of that good stuff. And he gets a chance to kind of debug, you know, not only get his head into the job, but also debug the project and make sure we've got all our ducks in a row and things are ordered properly. And then after that meeting, he spends, or she, whatever time period they need to kind of digest the job. And then in preparation for the pre-start meeting. The pre-start meeting is held out on the job. It's an introduction and a handoff in front of the customer. We're handing the job off to the carpenter, which they know. They're not surprised by this because we talk about it through the sales process. But by the time the customer gets to meet the carpenter knows what's going on with the job, and there's a whole bunch of confidence, you know, right then and there. And without that other meeting, that was an awkward awkward transition. The customer felt like, okay, this person's in charge, but he didn't even know, you know, what I'm doing for lights under the cabinets, and you know, how can you put this person in charge of my job? So anyway, that cleared all that stuff up. Cool. So how does this relate to your question? You know, the carpenter has all this information, including the budget and the scope, and all of our guys know that if it's not in the scope of work, if it's not in the budget, then it's red flagged as a possible extra. And we immediately address that on the spot, you know, in that, you know, if the customer has to hang the door and it's not in the proposal, the carpenter's going to say, well, that's not part of the proposal, but I'm happy to do that for you. Do you want an estimate, or do we, you know, basically we'll do that sometimes T&M where they'll just say, no, just do it and bill us for it, which I'm fine with on the smaller stuff. But anyway, the carpenter is fully aware of what is part of that job and what is not part of that job, and knows that we're tracking it.
Awesome.
Okay, I got a couple of things before we kind of wrap up. The first one is, what are some of the problems that you faced, or maybe companies might face? Because I think it's one thing to talk about how great it is, but things do happen when you make this shift that can be challenges or problems. And so maybe just really quickly kind of give us some ideas on what some of the things are that they may run into, and maybe forewarned is a good thing.
Well, I think we touched on some of them. You know, basically the big one is some are going to love this and some are not.
Right.
Some will want to be in charge and others won't. So, you know, of those that are interested and that you think are qualified, you just have to have patience and coach them along. You know, because it's a real nice thing when you get good lead carpenters that have been with you for a while and they know what's going on. Everything just kind of works, and they hold us accountable just as much as we hold them accountable for getting this stuff done.
Right.
You know, regardless of the, you know, their willingness or unwillingness, you know, not everyone's going to be you know, good at the organization, good at the planning, good at dealing with the budgets and all of that stuff. So that's, you know, a big one. The change orders, you know, are another thing. It took us a long time to dial that in. It, you know, the guys were missing a lot of stuff and doing a lot of extra work. And, you know, we kept looking at our budgets and, you know, the budgets are getting blown away, and come to find out they're doing a whole lot of extra work. You know, so that's a big thing, and it's going to be a little bit of back and forth with you and your lead carpenters in trying to get them to really understand what is an extra and what isn't. There's a big tendency to have them start saying, well, that should have been included. You should have seen that. And it's not, you know, it's not the case. You know, we don't see everything, and they're there for a lot longer than we are after the first day. You know, they've been there 8 hours. We may have been 8 hours, you know, total in all of our time there. And so they're good at catching that stuff, and they got to get good at catching that stuff and making sure that we tactfully handle it. So.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So you can run into these things. What I always try to tell people is they're not insurmountable. They can be worked on and they can be fixed. Just don't give up. If you think the system works for you, don't give up on it. I think the last thing is, and particularly when we talk about shifting, I'm imagining the business owner being on the job, actually producing some of the labor. And I guess I'm a little bit concerned that people may not understand the change in pricing. In other words, when you take a business owner out of production and now you have to pay that person all of the money they were making strictly out of overhead or sales commissions, which typically can be overhead. So what do you recommend in terms of looking at the markup that you use or the margin that you're shooting for when you're making this shift?
Well, I remember that in 1994 when we made the shift. It was on one project we had sold, and I was counting myself as some of the labor. And when I had everybody do the, you know, the guys do the job, there was nothing left. After the job, I paid it all out in labor, and we went over budget, so I paid even more out. There was nothing for me. So if you've got a production manager, or you don't, I mean, salesperson, production manager, owner, you have to really think about those things ahead of time and mark up to cover that, because you're no longer charging for that out in the job, you know, out on the job.
Yeah.
So that was a big eye opener for me. But we met Walt Steppenwerth way back in the day, and he helped me put that 67% markup on everything that we do, and that pretty much covered that and then some. So
yeah, so you know, that's one of those things. Go ahead.
One of the other things too is you have to factor in not only the labor for the carpenter, but the lead carpenter. You got to put some money in there for him to do his job as lead carpenter. So there's got to be some management time, maybe an hour for every day, maybe up to a couple of hours for every day of labor you have. Has to be in there for that.
Yeah, so that's a job. That's still a job cost, but thank you. That really, that helps a lot, as that is a problem for many companies, is they're figuring on 8 hours of physical production, and the lead carpenter really has to take 30 minutes or an hour. Sometimes during the rough-in phases of a job, they maybe spend 4 hours out of that day making sure the trade contractors do their work properly and doing right. inspections and things like that. So that's a really, really great insight. So I guess maybe as we wrap this up, Steve, what might be like a golden nugget, just one little thing that you could say to somebody who's thinking about doing this? What would you leave them with as we end up?
Well, this wheel has already been invented, you know, and you are the guru when it comes to, you know, the lead carpenter system. You wrote the book on it, after all. So I would say plug in and learn, you know, reach out to others. If you're a member of Remodelers Advantage, reach out to others that are doing the lead carpenter system. Learn the ins and outs of the system and, you know, buy your book, the Lead Carpenter Handbook, another shameless plug. If you have, like I have my production manager enrolled in the production manager roundtable, which is awesome, without having him learning how to deal with you know, the production management of things. It all kind of works to help, you know, make the lead carpenter system successful. And so don't reinvent the wheel. Go learn. So.
That's fantastic. Thank you very much, Steve. Really appreciate your participating with us.
Oh, absolutely. It was fun.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Take care.
Okay.
Take care.
Yep. See ya.
Well, Tim, this episode was packed with things, and I have many notes, but the one thing that I took was right from the beginning of the podcast. Steve talked about steering or turning the lead carpenter back to the problem or back to the paperwork. And that, to me, is so important in terms of establishing that muscle of making decisions in the field. So if you're always, you know, It's not this direct, either answer it or you know, roughly say, figure it out. You know, it's kind of that steering and guiding, working with them to build the muscle of being able to make the decision in the field. I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, it goes along with the whole idea of getting all the paperwork accurate to start with.
Mm-hmm.
Because what does happen with many companies is the lead carpenters are so disenchanted by the information, they don't even look. And so they figure, like, it's not going to be there. I might as well just call. And yeah. So the problem could be that the paperwork hasn't been good. The other problem is that many of us feel like we need to be needed. So when a lead carpenter calls us up and says, hey, what's the hardware in here? We're the ones that go look it up because we feel like we're being useful. And we need to just, like, look in the paperwork, dude. It's on page 20, you know. Read it carefully and call me back when you find it.
Yeah.
You know, by pushing it back to them, it's really critical.
Yeah. And what else? I saw the management time was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was just a great one. So
I think one of the really big things for anybody making the shift is don't assume that every great carpenter is going to be a lead carpenter. Mm-hmm. And Steve had this great illustration of the super seasoned veteran that knew everything about construction, who just wanted to be the carpenter. And he was terrific and fine with having this young guy as the lead carpenter, even though he didn't know as much about construction, because the other guy didn't want to deal with the management side of it. And so you have to do that. And I think the other thing that's really critical in making the shift is don't make this a promotion. Don't make this a thing where, you know, now we're moving you up, because if it doesn't work, you have to move them back down. And my experience with companies is, I don't know, 95% of the people end up leaving because they've been demoted or embarrassed in front of everybody. So make it a shift, a horizontal shift of responsibility, if at all possible. be willing to pay some of your great carpenters more than your lead carpenters at times. Although I do think that as people take on more responsibility, they should be paid more.
Great. That's awesome. All right. Well, once again, we want to thank Steve Nash for joining us today, and we want to thank you for listening to another episode of The Tim Fowler Show.
And remember, at The Tim Fowler Show, we're working hard to eliminate "it is what it is" from your vocabulary.
This has been another episode of The Tim Fowler Show. Want to hire Tim and fast-track your growth? Visit remodelersadvantage.com/consulting to learn more. And if you'd like more information about roundtables, our world-class peer advisory program, please send me an email at steve@remodelersadvantage.com. And of course, don't forget to subscribe to the show and comment on iTunes. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.